ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. I hope you're having a good day wherever you are. It's nice of you to stop by today. I'm Henrik, and as you know, if you are a regular listener, the website is redicecreations.com, where we have more radio videos and news for you on a lot of the topics that we follow, cover, and consider to be important. We are going to shift gears a bit today. We have a return visit from Ken Rolla. He was with us a couple of years ago when we spoke about some of the more covert weather engineering programs and the consequent methods that can be adopted in order to try to lessen the health impacts from, for example, the fallout from the geoengineering program. Well, recently we've done some shows on what we can do to improve our health when it comes to things that we are in control of, things that we have personal influence over and can make choices about. But today we'll look at some of the things that are, for the most part, outside of the realm of our influence, at least for the time being, and the things that also isn't being reported properly in the media, not recognized as problems. As with, for example, the radiation from Fukushima. This nightmare has been unfolding since 2011, and it's another area that is massively covered up and not reported on properly. You know, I remember when Chernobyl happened, for example. I was a young boy, and we saw some tremendous detrimental effects of this, and it's still ongoing today. These are long-term effects we're talking about. So if there is anything that can be done about this, I'd certainly like to know about it, even if there are methods that are less known. Also, later in the program, we'll talk more about genetically modified organisms, how to clean up our water, how to grow food, and a lot of other useful and really good stuff here. But let me just give you a quick bio on Ken here before we get started. He is a natural health educator and inventor from New Smyrna Beach in Florida in the U.S. He has been teaching classes and retreats since 93 on rejuvenation and cellular regeneration using raw and sprouted vegetarian foods, herbs, food-based natural supplements, detoxification, and also on other emotional healing and reprogramming methods. With a background in electrical engineering, physics, and computer science for 23 years, he worked a variety of jobs in the medical industry from the patient level to the national policy level. In 2005, Ken became certified as a natural health educator by Hippocrates Health Institute in West Palm Beach, Florida. Hey, Ken, welcome back. It's good to speak with you again. Hope you've been doing well since we last spoke a couple of years ago now.
Well, I have been doing well. It's been pretty interesting. Thanks for having me back, Henrik. I really appreciate it. I always enjoy being on your program and speaking with you. But I have had a very interesting time since I've been on your show last.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, we can definitely get into some of that later, too. Maybe we have a couple of things lined up here today that we want to get into. And one of the things I wanted to begin to ask you a little bit more about is pertaining to what's happening right now in not only in the U.S., it's happening in Australia. There have been murmurs in Europe, too, about this. But mandatory vaccinations, because I know you deal with certain things like autism, for example, which is a classic symptom of vaccination, it is believed. And I think the science is there to back that up. But what can you say about the push for mandatory vaccination, specifically, and of course, on children, and that you know, they have to be vaccinated to go to school, etc.? How do you see that this might change the overall health of our kids, Ken?
Well, if it's successful, of course, there are going to be a lot of people getting sick and dying from it and being severely harmed. But I don't think it's actually going to happen. I think my impression is that ultimately it's going to be stopped. I think that it's a wake-up call for not just people who are aware of the health issues, but I think it's going to make people aware of the health issues. So I don't think they'll be successful. I've heard a lot of things proposed before about mandatory vaccinations and, you know, chipping people and all kinds of stuff, and none of it has happened because there's so many people opposing it within the healthcare system, within the military, within the government, within, you know, all kinds of institutions, and of course the general public having an outcry when this kind of stuff goes down. So, you know, right now you're seeing the outcry, and even if it is implemented, I think what you'll see is, of course, a lot of people will refuse it, and there'll be some kind of a power struggle over it, and ultimately I think it'll be canned. But if somehow everyone was forced to get vaccinated, which I really don't see, because quite honestly, I can tell you, I'm pretty good at manifesting, and there's no way in hell that's going to happen to me. But if somehow, you know, people were worried about that, and if, you know, people did start getting vaccinated, there are things that you can do to prevent damage and to heal the damage before you have any severe problems. You know, I've been recommending for many years now for people to be taking in nutrients and detoxifiers every day so that they're building their immune system and pulling out the thousands of poisons that we breathe in and drink in and eat in every day, not the least of which is radioactive elements, which we'll talk about in a bit. So, you know, people that are still getting vaccinations, particularly when there's a push for mass vaccinations, because, you know, this has happened before with various flus and things. They contrived these scares over Ebola or swine flu or bird flu, or, you know, all the way back to Legionnaires' disease in the 70s. This has been tried over and over again, and it's not been successful. But, you know, when they try these scares, what happens is, you know, some people get inoculated, and then it comes out later that, oh, there was accidentally the live flu virus in the flu vaccine or some toxin that shouldn't be there, and there's absolutely no way that those toxins could get into the vaccines. It's impossible because they have systems in place in laboratories making these things, so it cannot happen. You know, laboratories aren't like auto shops or hairdressers. You know, they have extremely strict protocols when they're dealing with virulent diseases and they're making vaccines. So there's no way in hell that, you know, 1 million doses of the flu vaccine can have the live flu virus in it. There's no way that can happen unless it's intentionally created. So then that's exactly what has happened in the past, you know. And so, and I know personally, the last time it happened with the flu vaccine a couple of years ago, a few friends of mine whose family members were foolish enough to take those vaccines got extremely sick. One of them almost died. And, you know, and I told them, well, you know, here's some solutions for that. And, of course, these people believed in the medical system, which is why they got the vaccination in the first place, so they weren't about to take my advice. But if you're open-minded and you somehow do get forced to take these vaccines, you can take detoxifiers before, during, and afterwards, and if you suffer at all, it will be minimal because you'll pull those toxins. And even if they're alive bacteria or viruses, even if they're genetically modified bacteria or viruses, they're really simple and expensive things that can kill them quickly. For example, Miracle Mineral Supplement, or MMS, also known as chlorine dioxide, which has been severely attacked by the FDA and the medical establishment because it really works extremely well against all pathogens, including GMO pathogens. And it's ridiculously cheap. It's like $25 for a six-month supply. If you're taking that, even if you're not taking it beforehand, at the moment you start feeling ill, you start taking that, if you've got any kind of pathogen in you, even genetically modified, it's going to kill it. It's going to wipe it out. Because these pathogens all have certain things in common that differentiate them from beneficial probiotic bacteria and even beneficial viruses and microbes. And that is, one of the things is that they are generally anaerobic, and they also have a positive charge on their surface. And they also have certain protein structures holding them together. So I know of certain supplements that you can take that will neutralize that positive charge and kill them, or it will flood the body with oxygen, and since they're anaerobic, that will kill them. And I know some supplements that will break down the protein structures in them, only them, and they just dissolve and die, and quickly, you know, within hours. So
and this is okay to give to children as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. One of them is a soap, and I can't give out the brand name, unfortunately, because the people that are making it, they're selling it as a as a parasite cleanse, and they actually originally developed it for agriculture because you can put it on soil and it will break down the minerals in the soil into monoatomic and angstrom particles, which plants can then uptake, and you get insane growth and nutrient levels. So they originally developed for that, but they found out it has all these other amazing properties, including killing pathogens in the body extremely well. And it's a simple soap. It's just a soap made out of like five or six different herbs, really simple herbs like peppermint and chocolate and a few other things, two ferns and stuff. I mean, it's like, it seems like there's no way it would be able to do what it does. But the reason it does what it does is because it's high in ORMIS, these superconducting monoatomic elements, which we can talk about. So there are simple little supplements like that. Some of them are high in ORMIS. Some of them are have been structured so that they put out scalar energy or scale waves that kill these pathogens, or they neutralize the charge, or they flood the body with oxygen. And in the case of MMS, for example, that's what it does. It is converted to massive amounts of oxygen in the body, and it gets out into the cells and the bloodstream, and it kills these pathogens extremely well.
I want to ask you more about that later, ORMIS, and what happens there, but I just want to mention as well for folks here, California here now recently, then they passed a bill, I guess it's a Senate committee. I'm a little bit not that well up to speed with the American system here. But anyway, it's California's SB 277, a mandatory vaccination bill that passed Senate committee after it was basically failing after it was voted on or something. It was a public outcry around it to push the pro-vaccination issue on people. And then they basically went, as they always do, they went around behind the people's back and tried to push it anyway. So I guess that's more evidence of how progressive California is. So we'll see what happens there. But anyway, it's disconcerting and worrying. But what I'm worrying about most, I guess, as well, Ken, is that they used to have, you know, religious exemption and different things you can do if you don't, you know, believe in this. But it seems that they're getting smart to the fact that people are trying to get out of it that way, and trying to remove that as well as a possibility. So we'll see what happens. We'll see where this goes. I mean, I would never personally take a shot, even if I was forced to do so. I would be hauled off to prison if so, and they would have to forcibly give it to me. But at that point, it's good to know that there are certain things that can be done as a pre-measure to try to limit the damage that the vaccines do, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to come down to them hauling us off, because there's just too many people. There are too many people in law enforcement and the military, number one, that are aware of this stuff, thanks to the internet, thanks to people like you and me. So I don't think it's going to come down to that, but if it did, yeah. You know, it's like if somebody came to my house with a gun or whatever, or with handcuffs and said, if you don't take this vaccine, we're going to haul you off. Like, okay, give me the vaccine. And then I would go back inside and immediately start taking all these products, and bada bing, it's gone and no worries. the thing you have to keep in mind, I say this all the time in my talks, is that the ultimate trump card with all this ridiculous stuff that, you know, these people try to do is that consciousness creates reality. And that is not some kind of metaphysical conceit. Scientists are proving that consciousness literally creates matter and energy that we can see and measure. The brain is a scalar wave transceiver. The whole cosmos is composed of this fast-as-light scalar energy that slows down and coagulates into our 3D reality. And our bodies are a system for receiving and transmitting that and converting it into matter and energy and creating the reality around us. So when you truly understand that we create our reality, whatever nonsense that these controllers, or what I call world management, what they come up with, there's always a solution for it if you just look around. The problem is that most people on the planet are so mind-controlled that they don't even think to look for a solution, when all you've got to do is type a few things into Google most of the time, and you can pull it right up. But if you don't know to ask the question or look for the answer, then you're creating your own mind prison and your own problem. So, you know, there are plenty of people around like me who are teaching these solutions, and they're inexpensive generally, and they're very simple. So it's really just a matter of being aware and looking for the solutions instead of going, oh, woe is me, there's nothing I can do, or what are they going to do if they come and haul us off? There's always a solution, because the trump card is consciousness creates reality, and you create your reality.
Well, yeah, pacification is the biggest tool that they have at their disposal, thinking that we're not going to do anything about something, you know, and just give up before we even begin to try. That's how they win, right? So
exactly,
you know. But tell us a bit more about, before we definitely get into the radiation thing. There's so much stuff that which is interesting and it's pertinent still to what's going on, not only in Fukushima but in other places as well. But we spoke about this kind of last time, but just tell us a little bit more about Ormus and how that works. And another thing is, you know, why doesn't the pathogens, why can't they take these scalar waves? What happened there? What can you say about that?
Okay. Yeah, let me explain a few fundamentals, because this will be probably pertinent to our entire conversation today. There are two concepts in, I guess you'd say, in physics that I've been speaking about for years, and a lot of people don't get it, and it's really not complicated in concept. You know, the details maybe, and if you're trying to mathematically define it, might be. But there are two ideas. Okay, one is about this energy that scientists now are calling scalar energy or scalar waves. It goes by other names such as vortex energy or torsion waves or chi or prana, even consciousness, tachyon energy, all these different names, orgone. They're all different names for the same thing, which is this fast-as-a-light energy that's flowing through the cosmos. It, from what we can see, it emanates from the centers of galaxies, and it spirals outward as it goes, and it is relayed from sun to sun to sun throughout the galaxy. So, and there's actually scientific proof of this. This is not just me saying this. There's I show this in my presentations, and I think I've got it on my resources page on my website, where physicists proved that there's this massive amount of photon energy coming out of the centers of galaxies, just blasting out, and it's going way beyond the speed of light. It's light, but it's going beyond what we've been told is the speed of light, because the speed of light isn't fixed, and there are lots of types of photonic energy that can go way beyond what we've been told is the speed of light. But it comes zooming out of the centers of galaxies, it's spiraling around, and at the centers of suns and planets, you've got singularities, or these black hole, white hole combinations that are like interdimensional vortexes or interdimensional portals. So the energy is relayed from the large suns at the center of the galaxy outward to the smaller suns. And so when it gets to us, it's coming down to us from our sun and up from the center of the Earth, from the singularity at the center of the Earth. And this energy is really the fabric of the universe. It is the energy that all matter and energy that we can see and measure is what it's made of. It slows down and it coagulates into matter, and it coagulates or slows down into the electromagnetic energy that we measure and you know, label in the electromagnetic spectrum. And so that energy, since it's what matter and conventional energies are composed of, it can also alter them at the fundamental level, at the subatomic level. And that's exactly what happens. It can create matter, it can alter matter, and in fact, the body does this all the time. Dr. Thomas Bearden figured out that he applied for a patent on a device for neutralizing radioactivity, and he got the idea from studying human cells, and he figured out that human cells actually send scalar energy through these superconducting minerals in the body back through time. It actually goes out of 3D space-time into other realms of space-time, and actually goes back in time and gets the pattern for healthy cells from previous patterns in history, and then brings it back into the present. And that's how you can, for example, heal DNA. You know, we've been told the DNA is the genetic blueprint. Well, actually, it's not the genetic blueprint. It's the carrier of the genetic blueprint. The genetic blueprint is actually in consciousness itself. It's in an individual's energetic field, or their consciousness. And it's brought from their consciousness into their physical structure through the DNA and these superconducting minerals, which we'll talk about in a moment, and through the body. Hence the, you know, the concept of chi and the flow of chi in and out of the body through the acupuncture meridians and all that. And so this scalar energy, which is also the energy of consciousness, you know, your brain generates scalar waves, and if you focus on something and have enough duration and intensity on what you're focusing on, those scalar waves will go out into the quantum field around you, and it will draw in other matter and energy, and that's how you create your reality. Or it will just itself coagulate into matter and energy. So Thomas Bearden, in his patent, when discovered that human cells, not only can they go out and get the pattern for healthy cells from the past, but they can alter matter. So they can actually alter the cells in the body at a subatomic and atomic level and heal them. And so you can do the same thing. That's how, for example, Kundalini yoga works. When you're focusing on the breath and meditating and focusing on healing things in the body, you can physically alter the matter in the body with your consciousness, because your consciousness is scalar waves or scalar energy. So it turns out there are a lot of other uses for that, such as neutralizing radioactivity, because the scalar waves can alter matter. And in fact, people are doing that. There have been a bunch of people that have done that, and they've gotten patents on it, which I think I've mentioned this on previous shows. I've got a link on my website with information on this, because I know a lot of times people, this sounds like science fiction, and people think I'm just making it up. But if you go to radiationlinks.freshandalive.com, you can see links to some of the scientists with methods for neutralizing radioactivity using scalar energy and other methods as well. There's like 61 patents worldwide for methods for neutralizing radioactivity, including 8 patents in Japan. And so it's very well known how to neutralize radioactivity.
But it's extraordinary that it's not being utilized anywhere.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's
well,
just,
it's not being utilized intentionally, because
of course.
If it was known, if it was publicly known and average, let's say, scientists and technicians were doing it, it would eliminate the nuclear power industry. And more to the point, it would eliminate the nuclear weapons industry.
Well, wouldn't it be, Zurkin, but another interpretation of that is, of course, that if we could neutralize the spent fuel rods and all this kind of stuff, that would make it more safe, correct?
It would, but it would also, one of the things that comes along with this package is that these technologies also can create free energy. So there's no need to have toxic nuclear energy, even if you can neutralize the waste, because
right.
You got these other technologies that can make massive amounts of energy inexpensively and non-toxically. And that's why it's not being allowed out. It breaks the whole paradigm around not just energy production, but the whole basic fundamental concepts of how matter and energy operate. And so, and it does, it implies, consciousness creating reality and all this kind of stuff. And so there are a lot of different fronts on why this stuff is not wanted out. It wouldn't just alter our methods of power production or being able to neutralize waste. It also would alter our fundamental beliefs about the nature of consciousness and reality and those kinds of things. And there are big heavy hitter physicists and scientists who are making these discoveries and publicizing them. It's just that there are a few voices in amongst thousands, many thousands. But for example, Roger Penrose, who is an Oxford University physicist who's co-authored books with Stephen Hawking, he's got books and books about that our current physics is fundamentally flawed, and that it's basically a pipe dream, that what we're being taught in our schools about the nature of matter and energy is just fundamentally wrong. And, this guy is not a Nobel Prize winner, but he's won just about every other prize in physics. And he's extremely well-respected. There are many other scientists. There's one, a man named Daniel Shechtman, who was a Nobel Prize winner for discovering what he calls quasi-crystals. And essentially, they're crystal formations that should not be able to exist in three-dimensional reality. And because they do exist, it destroys all of our laws of physics, basically. And so there are many, many examples like that in physics now, where heavy hitters are showing that what we believe about the nature of matter and energy and reality is wrong. But it's not coming out, just like methods for neutralizing radioactivity are not coming out, because it has broad applications and broad implications.
Yeah, there's so many different ways that you have listed on the website here, because obviously we're thinking about Fukushima, we're thinking about other issues. I mean, just look at, for example, the immense resources that are spent on trying to safeguard spent nuclear fuel and the facilities that have to be built and underground and all these things. I mean, it's just I rewatched a documentary a while back. It was on the Finnish nuclear program, actually, on their, you know, project extending, you know, tens of thousands of years into the future of how they're, how we're going to store this fuel, right? And it was like this very daunting task, of course. And you, when you watch the documentary, I'll pull it up, the name of it, I forget it here right at the moment, but there's so many different measures. There's even like, you can do it with bacteria that's eating it. There's tons of these different ways that are just not being, it's just not being tried.
Exactly. And the simple and expensive ones are the ones that I show people how to do, because you can clear it, not only neutralize and clear it out of your body, but you can clear it out of your yard, your environment. You can clear it out of the sky. I mean, I developed a technology right after the Fukushima disaster to clear it out of the sky for a 75-mile radius, and it works. But, you know, I started going out and talking about it, and I got death threats, and I had to go into hiding. And so, you know, and I worked with a man named Yul Brown back in the early 90s who developed water-fueled technology that can neutralize radioactivity. And you can actually go on YouTube, and if you search on Brown's gas, neutralize radioactivity, you can see videos about it. And he basically would use the gas, burn a flame, and you could burn radioactive elements. And the flame had all these weird properties, and it would react with things at the atomic level and rearrange the atomic structure, so it would take these radioactive elements and rearrange them into non-radioactive elements, and problem solved. And of course, he was successful in going to the U.S. Department of Energy and also every member of Congress. He petitioned them with videos and dossiers on all the technology. He had several DOE officials and a bunch of senators, U.S. senators, who came and watched him demo neutralizing it. And, you know, four or five of the senators got very excited and wanted to promote it and expand it. And the DOE absolutely denied that it could work. You know, they said, this goes against all known laws of physics, and therefore it can't work. And so he got suppressed. He got threatened and shot at and, you know, and all kinds of things. And so he ultimately couldn't get it out. So I've seen it done. I know for a fact, first of all, that you can neutralize high-level radioactive elements because I've seen it done. I've also recently, I had to neutralize radioactivity in my body from ingesting hot radioactive particles, so I know that can be done personally, and I know how to do it, which is what I'm teaching now. And we can talk about that. And I know how to clear it out of the environment.
Let's get into that a little bit later here. I just want to mention, by the way, the movie was called Into Eternity. It's a good movie to watch if you want to just get an idea of the project that is involved in trying to store this. Finland has developed a program basically to be the world's first permanent repository, and that's the big difference, because all these other countries are moving stuff around all the time, but they're basically digging into the solid bedrock, this huge system of underground tunnels. They showed this in the documentary or the film. And the clause here was that the entire the project is entailed that the waste must remain in the zone, hazardous zone, for about 100,000 years. I mean, it's just, It's unbelievable when you think about it.
It's so ridiculous. I had the, I guess you'd say, the privilege of having dinner one time with the president of the company in the United States, the largest nuclear waste disposal company in the United States. And I was telling him about all these technologies for, you know, neutralizing this stuff. And he absolutely would not believe it. He would not even consider looking at it.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, and he was saying the same thing. Oh, we put in concrete canisters and buried underground. Well, but he said that the reason that they're taking that approach is because they assume that in the future somebody will figure out how to deal with it.
Right.
So
exactly.
They're basically, you know, buying their children's future on the hope that somebody can figure out how to deal with it. And of course, somebody already has. But when you say, "Well, somebody already has," well, I'm sorry, that's going to interfere with my multi-million-dollar income. So let's wait until I'm dead and gone.
Of course. And then it's also, if someone had developed it, we'd know that by now, right? I've heard that several times. Yeah. It's like, well, I'm telling you now, you know, well, that doesn't count. Who are you, you know?
Yeah.
Got to come from the right source, right? So.
Yeah. And it's like, I've witnessed it myself personally. I'm not asking you to believe me. Just check it out. No, no, no. That breaks all minimum.
Sure. Sure.
Yep. I'm not even going to waste my time.
Yep. Just a final note on this. I just want to mention it because I thought it was so funny. But in this movie, they showed how they even developed a... They were developing a symbolic language that was going to be able to convey the basic, fundamental, basic idea that this is hazardous material. Don't go into this repository kind of thing. But they had to consider that it's going to be 100,000 years out. So that means that all kinds of things might have happened on the Earth that we might even not speak the same language anymore. It was just hilarious, you know, the money that was poured into this. Anyway, I just want to mention that people can take a look at it. But the attack on Japan, as I see it anyway, with Fukushima, has been, I mean, relentless on Japan ever since World War II, really. Two atomic bombs dropped on them. They've been, you know, demonized before, during, and after the Second World War. And now there are people that speculate, of course, that the Fukushima event was an attack of sorts. Some people say, you know, high frequency facility that kind of triggered the tectonic shift. Some speculate even there were underwater nukes that triggered this. I don't know any of this more than anybody else, but even time itself, I guess, has been a weapon in this case, considering the placement of the nuclear reactors. And I believe the GM was largely part and responsible of that. But what's going on with Fukushima right now, Ken? And are we suffering from the radiation fallout of that still?
Oh, yeah. Of course, you know, it's been, ever since it happened, it's been kept out of the press. And I think in the first 3 months, when they were measuring, even, you know, the measuring that the EPA and Health Canada and the Japan Meteorological Research Institute, which is kind of like the Japan's EPA, they were all measuring for radioactive elements in the atmosphere and in water, but they weren't, you know, not a very broad spectrum of them, and just not doing at all a good enough job, particularly in light of Chernobyl previous to that. So they were already measuring, and I think in the first 3 months, the Japan, or after Fukushima, the Japan Meteorological Research Institute measured like 13.5 quadrillion becquerels of radiation coming out in the ocean. And so after that, they and the United States EPA and Health Canada all shut off their monitoring because they knew, I mean, it only took a few weeks for that fallout to come through the atmosphere and get to the United States and not just the West Coast. A lot of people think, oh, it just landed on California and dropped down in the rain. No, it's come across the whole world. It is definitely coming down a lot in the West Coast of the United States, but it's made its way all the way over to the East Coast of the entire United States, and particularly more concentrated in the Northeast and in the Midwest. It's showing up in water supplies. I mean, all you've got to do is just Google, you know, EPA radiation in water, or, you know, radioactivity in water, or fallout, radioactive fallout in water, those kinds of things. And you can see the EPA's own statistics on the amount or the percentages of radioactivity in municipal water supplies. And it's insane. It's like 70% of the water supplies have cesium-137 in them, stuff like that. And so there have been some studies done, like I think in Pennsylvania there was one done that directly attributed higher mortality rates, infant and adult mortality rates specifically, to Fukushima. They've already got them well documented for Chernobyl. So it's not, you know, if you're looking around, you can find some information about the effect, but it's definitely coming down on all of this. Dr. Gabriel Cousins at the Tree of Life Rejuvenation Center in Arizona, who's always decades ahead of everybody else, he's been measuring what's been coming down on him, and he was saying even in his greenhouse where they're growing food for their center that they've got radioactivity, but it's about 80 times higher outdoors coming down in Arizona than in his greenhouse. So we've all got this stuff coming down on our food and in our water supplies, and we're ingesting it. And usually it's at low levels, and so what you're seeing is a pandemic of thyroid problems across the globe. in the northern hemisphere, at least. The southern hemisphere is not being affected as much. And, of course, rates of cancer increasing and those kinds of things. And so I had the misfortune or fortune, I guess, ultimately, I guess it was fortunate, to ingest a pretty hefty amount of hot radioactive particles on my food back in February of this year.
How did that happen? What happened?
Well, I was, I grow most of my own food. And so I had, well, there's kind of more to the story, but let's just say that in this area, we don't have much fallout coming down on us. But they've been using some new HARP technology, which is SCADA wave technology. And I say they, the governments, are using these HARP technologies and they're, you know, spraying chemtrails and stuff. And they use the HARP technology to make the chemtrails hang longer in the sky and various things. So we weren't as protected as we used to be against this fallout and the chemtrails. And I had some food growing outdoors, so we harvested a bunch of greens to make a salad, and we also used some from a health food store. So I don't know if it was coming down here or if it was from something from California or somewhere else, but made a big salad, and my wife and I both ate the salad, and she was fine, but within an hour or so, I started getting indigestion and gas, and by the next day, my whole GI tract was burning, and I could tell right away it felt very serious. I mean, I never worry about getting diseases and stuff because I know how to heal them. You know, I'm not worried about getting cancer or now, you know, ingesting radiation and stuff. But it's just like whatever comes our way, I know how to deal with it. But this was something just out of the blue, and it felt like somebody put a zip tie around my colon. It's like stuff wasn't coming out. I was eating food and hardly anything was coming out. I had lots and lots of gas. My whole guts were burning. And I didn't know what it was, but I thought, man, this is so serious, I might have to go get surgery, which, if you know me, that's like anathema to my way of thinking. And so so I scheduled a session with a SCIO practitioner. A SCIO is a device. Its full name is QXCI SCIO, S-C-I-O, for folks that want to Google it. It's the scalar energy device. They call it a quantum biofeedback device, and basically you put electrodes on your wrists and ankles and forehead, and this machine can measure the scalar frequencies of various things in the body, and it can determine what's going on in the body in great detail. And it can even detect GMO pathogens, it can detect radioactivity, it can detect even what fast food you're eating by the toxins that are in your body. So it's quite interesting, and it can actually send scalar waves back into the body and help support healing and accelerate healing. So I scheduled, after 2 days of this burning, I scheduled an appointment 3 days later. But it just so happens that I was taking a new supplement that I was testing out. It was a zeolite supplement, which is a mineral. It's a volcanic mineral that's very, very good at pulling toxins and pathogens out of the body.
Yeah, I've tried some of that. Isn't it like a kind of has a hexagonal shape or something to it, which managed to kind of pull out toxins but leave good minerals and vitamins and everything else there?
Yeah,
as far
exactly.
As I understand
the minerals are in a atomic or a molecular structure like a geodesic dome or a kind of like a soccer ball. It's they call it a cage, but it's basically this buckyball cage that has a strong negative charge inside. And as I mentioned before, one thing that toxins and free radicals and pathogens have in common is they've got a positive charge on them. So when you ingest these minerals, the particles are very small. They can go in anywhere that water can get into, this particular one that I was taking. And that negative charge latches on to any kind of a toxin. And so I'd been testing them for a couple of weeks, and so I was taking it every day. And so by the time I got to the SCIO practitioner, it was showing that I didn't have any hot particles in me anymore, but I had the radiation damage, and the radiation was still in there. And so so then the SCIO actually, practitioner sent energy back in, And by the time I got done with a three-hour session, I felt like $1 million. And then I found out later from a Skio trainer that the Skio and its newer model called the Indigo are actually really phenomenal at neutralizing radioactivity in the body. But of course, nobody can claim that because, you know, the FDA would be on them in a heartbeat and probably arrest them. So so I'm not making that claim. I'm just telling you what happened within my body. It appeared to be working. So I went back, you know, once a week, every week, and for about a month, and I was taking these zeolites. I was taking this product called Rad Neutral, which I can talk about in a little bit, and I was taking my usual tonic of nutrients and superfoods like blue-green algae and liposomal vitamin C. That was another one that I started taking. Liposomal vitamin C was shown in Japan to be extremely effective at pulling out radioactivity from the body and healing the damage. Also, apple pectin, you know, good old simple apple pectin, which you can buy online, ridiculously cheap. I think I got powdered apple skin, basically, which is apple pectin, for $16 a pound. It's a huge bag. I started taking that. So I'd make a smoothie and throw all these things into it and ingest it. And within like 3 weeks, all traces of any damage was gone. But I felt, after just the first week, I felt like $1 million. So, you know, it was amazing. And that's, you know, one of the little secrets that the powers that be don't want people to know. You know, you think that, oh, you get irradiated, it's all over with. Well, if you don't know what to do, it is.
A lot of people in Japan died too, by the way. They've sacrificed themselves.
Exactly.
To
that's
clean
the sad
up
part
and,
is that, you know, millions of people have died from Chernobyl and Fukushima that unnecessarily, you know, they didn't have to. As a matter of fact, I've helped a couple of Chernobyl victims heal themselves completely. One was a quadriplegic, and after a year of doing all this detoxing and nutrifying the body, she was able to walk and grasp and normally again after being in a wheelchair. So, you know, it's just a matter of regenerating cells. You get toxins out of the body, you get the waste out of the body, and you bring dense nutrients in, and the body can heal itself. That's what it's designed to do.
Wow. Yeah, it's. Did you see that if there's someone actually in Japan now utilizing some of the methods? I think you had a couple of videos about that. There are people beginning to talk about they're trying different things, right?
Yeah. There's one of my old favorites who's been around for years and years is a Japanese agriculture professor named Teruo Higa. For those of you who want to Google him, it's spelled Teruo Higa. If you go to that radiationlinks.freshandalive.com, you can see him there. You can actually see the video there. He was, when he was back in the 60s, he was a chemical agriculture proponent, and he started looking at using microbes to improve agriculture, and he tried this microbe and that microbe and this and that and the other one, and none of them really worked. And after like 30 years of getting nowhere with it, in disgust, he threw all of his microbes out that he'd been experimenting with on his compost pile, and the compost pile just exploded with life, and the compost broke down really quick. And so he realized that what was needed was a synergistic blend of microbes. And so he developed one, and he called it Effective Microorganisms. And so he's been promoting that for decades now for everything from remediating polluted water to improving nutrients and nutrient uptake in plants, removing mold and mildew, you know, using it as a non-toxic cleaner. You can even use it as a human supplement, a dietary supplement, because it's a probiotic and it's non-toxic. And one of the things they discovered with it is that, and they actually discovered this in Fukushima City as well, that you can spray these microbes, water down many thousands of parts of water, like 500,000 parts of water to one part of these microbes. It's like a minuscule amount. You water it down and you spray it on the land, you spray it on crops, and it will break down the radioactive fallout and make it non-toxic and non-radioactive. And there's actually a video on that Radiation Links page on my website showing a Fukushima farmer in Fukushima City who's got a large farm with orchards and all acres and acres of all kinds of produce, and they're showing the local certification body there certifying his crops having no detectable radiation.
Right.
In Fukushima City, when everybody around him, all their crops are completely contaminated and unsellable.
Interesting. Yeah.
And the stuff is not only ridiculously cheap to buy, but you can make it yourself once you've gotten the culture. All it takes is mixing molasses and water and this culture, and you can make gallons and gallons and gallons of it. And I mean, a 5-gallon bucket of it costs about $50 to make, maybe less. And I mean, that's like a lifetime supply for the average human being. You could use it on, you know, acres and acres of land, and you can ingest it, and you can clean your house with it. And I mean, it's crazy. You can clean your lawn furniture with it and get rid of mold and mildew. It's just great stuff. So that's one solution that is being used in Japan right now.
So it just kind of neutralizes it, basically, and there's no residue, there's no waste that you need to get rid of or anything? No.
Yeah. No, it completely... See, microbes and fungus and parasites and these pathogens, molds, they're all nature's garbage cleaners. They go and clean up the garbage and break it down into non-toxic stuff. And so that's why, you know, he's by far not the only person doing this. There's Dr. Lynn McCaskey at University of Birmingham in the UK, who is, and she's, you know, she's got impeccable credentials. She's neutralizing radioactivity with E. coli bacteria. And she's got a whole team of professors working with her doing all kinds of cool stuff, neutralizing radiation with bacteria. And then, of course, you know, we mentioned previously when we were talking about bacteria that eat nuclear materials, that live in nuclear reactors.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, when they opened up the Chernobyl reactors, they discovered that there were, I think, black slime molds or something in there that were breaking down the radioactive elements. So nature steps in and fixes things and balances things, even if we muck it up. And so so there are lots of solutions using microbes for this stuff and other toxins as well. I've actually got this an article and video on this one on my blog at freshandaliveblog.com. There's a company in Texas that makes these microbe mixtures for cleaning up oil spills, and it's amazingly fast how quickly these microbes can eat oil and turn it into fish food. Not only make it non-toxic, but turn it into fish food. And they've actually, I think the video there's got a demo of these guys dumping, you know, crude oil into a swimming pool with shrimp swimming around in it, and they sprinkle the microbes on, and within like 30 seconds, the stuff breaks down and falls to the bottom, and the shrimp start eating it. You know, and it was so effective, they went to the Texas Commissioner of Water and the Commissioner of Land and showed them this technology, and they were both extremely interested in it, and because Texas has about 900 oil spills per year off its coast. You know, people don't realize that, but there's like 900 plus oil spills off the coast of Texas every year where they've got those oil rigs out in the ocean. And so the Commissioner of Water was fortunately an honest guy, and he said, well, we've got to mandate this in a law. And so they did. They got a law passed that required them to set up rescue teams on the coast of Texas so that whenever there was an oil spill, they sent out these teams with microbes that would clean up the spill. And they've been doing that since 1991. So, of course, when the Deepwater Horizon oil spill occurred, Texas said, well, okay, we got a solution. You know, once you get it capped, we can clean it up. And it was not allowed, of course.
Yeah.
But as a matter of fact, the Commissioner of Water quit. He resigned in disgust over the whole thing, and he wrote a book about it, which you can get on Amazon. That's on my blog, on that article. I don't remember the name of the book. But so, yeah, I mean, we've got solutions for all these kinds of problems. Fukushima, there's in Japan, it could all be cleaned up very quickly, within weeks or months at least. I personally emailed an ambassador to Sweden, a Japanese ambassador to Sweden, who I heard was lobbying the Japanese Diet to do something about Fukushima. And I told him, hey, here's all these solutions, and I've witnessed one personally myself, and I never got a response.
It's amazing how they never bother to look at it. You know, at least investigate it then if they're honest about it and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, but they don't even do that. Tell us just a little bit about You mentioned rad neutral. I'm curious what that is, and it's scalar enhanced spring water, basically. So is that is the scalar frequency like passed into the water? How's that process done, and what happens in your body when you take it then?
Yeah. Okay. Before we get into before I explain that, I should explain what we were going to explain earlier, which is ormus elements or monoatomic elements, because what rad neutral is. And I don't have any verification from this from Gabriel Cousins, who distributes it, and I don't think he's personally making it. I think somebody's making it for him. But based on my experience with things like that, I think that it is an ormus water, and ormus are monoatomic minerals. I think it's got these monoatomic minerals in them that have been programmed with scalar energy to emanate scalar energy frequencies that are the anti-frequencies to nuclear elements. So let me explain that a little bit more, because you have to kind of understand ormus elements to get that. It's been around for thousands of years. Various cultures around the planet have written about this stuff going back for thousands of years, everywhere on the planet, you know, from Asia to the Americas and Europe and Africa and Australia, everywhere. They've known that there are these minerals, these certain forms of minerals, like the platinum group minerals on the periodic chart, the platinum group elements, gold, silver, mercury, copper. These certain ones, because of their atomic structure, they can exist as individual discrete atoms of the material, which, because these are all metals, conventional physicists would tell you, or chemists would tell you, that's absolutely impossible. There's no way that these metals can exist as discrete atoms or monoatomic elements. Monoatomic just meaning single atoms. Because metals have extremely strong charges on their atoms, and they want to grab onto each other and create some kind of a crystal lattice or grid formation. So all these different metals, what makes them look like metals and have their properties is because they are crystalline, and the atoms are bound to each other in some three-dimensional grid pattern. So, but you can send these elements through certain processes and break them apart and create individual discrete atoms that are known as monoatomic elements, also known by their most recent American discoverer as orbitally rearranged monoatomic elements, or ORMIS, ORMIS or ORMIS. So you'll hear me talking about it. I tend to try to say monoatomic elements rather than ORMIS, because a lot of people, it sounds real cryptic when you say ORMIS, and it really isn't. It's just these certain minerals, certain elements, where they can exist in a state where the atoms are not bound to each other. And when they are in that state, they're superconducting, which has a whole interesting array of properties, and they're anti-gravitational, and they look like a white ceramic powder. So they go from being metallic looking, like imagine copper or silver, being converted into a white ceramic powder. So it's this radically different state of matter that they're in. And when they're superconducting, one of the properties that's been discovered with them is that they are multidimensional, meaning that they are not regular old three-dimensional matter that we're used to. They are this 3D matter that's physical, but it's simultaneously existing in other dimensions or frequencies of time and space. So they connect other dimensions of time and space to our 3D reality. And so in biology, in plants or microbes or animals or people, these minerals exist in their bodies, and they actually connect consciousness to the physical structures of the organism. And so that's where the mind-body connection happens in human beings or any organism. Doctors always talk about the mind-body connection. Well, if it's not just some made-up metaphysical concept, then there has to be a mechanism where the mind actually meets the physical structure of the body. And it turns out it does exist in these superconducting monoatomic elements. And these elements just happen to exist predominantly in these junctures all along the nervous system and the brain neural pathways that just happen to correspond to the acupuncture meridians. So what the acupuncture meridians actually are these superconducting deposits of these monatomic elements that create these black holes. They're basically black holes. They're these interdimensional portals where the energy of consciousness, which is scalar energy, can flow in and out of the physical structure. And so that's how you're able to alter the matter in your body and heal things. That's how your body heals things. And so when you're creating or taking a supplement like this Red Neutral, if you understand the premise, first of all, that scalar energy can create matter and alter matter, and all matter vibrates at certain frequencies. So, for example, a hydrogen atom, and this is not at all New Age, this is fundamental physics. When you look at the subatomic structure of hydrogen, for example, it's well known that the subatomic particles composed of it vibrate at certain frequencies. And by the way, the reason that is because those particles, there's been this debate in physics for over 100 years about the dual nature of matter at that level, that sometimes it acts like a particle and sometimes it acts like a wave. Well, in fact, now what's been discovered by regular old physicists is that what you really have are particles that are made out of waves of energy. So that's why they operate this way. And it's scalar waves is what they're made of. So hydrogen, for example, has a certain vibrational frequency at its subatomic structure. And so you can always identify hydrogen by its frequency. And the same thing with every other element known to man. They all have different vibrational frequencies. So, for example, if you combine two hydrogen with an oxygen, oxygen has a certain frequency, hydrogen has a certain frequency. You combine two hydrogen with one, you're going to get a certain overall frequency, and you can identify, hey, that's water. And that's how these biofeedback machines and things work. Well, if you've got superconducting monatomic elements, and they've already got a vibrational frequency that is way beyond normal elements, they can be programmed with scalar waves. You can program a frequency into them or multiple frequencies into them, and because they're kind of like crystals. In physics, this is very, very common in electronics and televisions and things like that. Crystals are used as oscillators, which just means you can send energy into a crystal in one frequency, and it'll come out the other end of the crystal at a different frequency. And it always comes out, let's say quartz, it'll always come out of quartz the same frequency because quartz has a certain structure. So the same thing with these monatomic elements. You can send energy into them, program them, arrange their structure, and then they can emanate those scalar wave frequencies all the time. So if you bombard them with scalar waves of the anti-frequencies of radioactive elements, let's say all known radioactive elements, you just program the anti-frequencies into some Ormus elements, then those Ormus elements are going to radiate those anti-frequencies in scalar waves all the time. Because these Ormus elements really act kind of like lenses or antennas for the scalar waves that are passing through the cosmos all the time, the ones that are coming from the sun and the ones that are coming from the center of the Earth. So what you're doing is creating a little antenna where that energy can come into a localized area. And so then if you go programming it so that it emanates those energies at certain frequencies, it'll neutralize radioactivity. And that's exactly how Red Neutral works, I believe.
Interesting.
Now, nobody's confirmed this with me. Because nobody, it's proprietary, and they're not going to tell me. But also, they can't say this stuff in public because, you know, they'd get in trouble. Anything that really works, you usually can't tell the truth about it publicly if you're selling it, because then, you know, you'll get attacked.
But, well, yeah, I would agree with that. There's nothing so suppressed as the truth in these times. Unfortunately, I definitely agree with that. Now, let's give out some details here again before we'll take a break here in a little bit. Let's talk about your website a little bit, and if there's anything else you'd like to mention and talk about that you have available for folks before we take a short break and then pick up in the second here.
Okay. My main website is freshandalive.com, and I've got links there to my Facebook page and my YouTube channel and other links, my blog. My blog is freshandaliveblog.com. And if you're listening to this before May 1st of 2015, then I'll be doing an event in Sedona Arizona, actually teaching all of this stuff, teaching the details of this stuff, how to protect yourself in various ways, and a lot of really interesting things. So that website is synergyinsedona.com, and I'll be there with three other really brilliant people that are also presenting. And I think Mike Adams of naturalnews.com actually is going to be doing a Skype question and answer session with the audience too. So it'll be really cool.
All right, great. We'll of course make sure to have the links up to the event and also to your website. But so you have a lot of the things that we talked about here available to different things that of course people can do if they are concerned with not only the topsoil depletion but also the GMO issue. We'll get into the GMO later, by the way, but the GMO issue, the radiation, a lot of other things. So you have a store on the website where people can check out a lot of your products, correct?
Right, right. I view my job as finding solutions to all these threats to our health. And so if I don't have this stuff myself, then I'll tell you where to get it. I'm not one of those people that tries to hold back and just push my stuff. If somebody else out there has something good and I can't carry it for some reason, then I'll tell, go there. So I've got a lot of that kind of stuff on my blog and website.
Yeah, definitely. Very good. Freshandlive.com is the website. Check out some of the things there. We'll take a short break here, folks. Stay with us. Stay with us, Ken, and we'll be right back. As we proceed in the second hour at redicemembers.com, we'll speak more about what to do concerning the GMO question, such as reverting hybrid and GMO plant DNA back to heirloom and heirloom seeds. We'll speak about how to start growing nutrient-dense food, even if you don't have access to a big garden. We'll also speak about water purification. Ken has a lot of good tips and tricks to circumvent and deal with a lot of the problems that we're not made aware of. And he's also tested a lot of different products out there in order to help you give some bearing on some of the things that seem to work and others that don't. So if you want to hear more, stay with us into the second hour here. To hear more, you can go to, as I mentioned, redicemembers.com, our members' website, and sign up to tune in to this continuation and all our previous programs. By the way, upcoming, we have a Radio 314 this Friday. Then on Red Ice Radio, you can hear Brian Enns Patrick, Mike Walsh, Neil Kramer, Ulla Damegård, Dr. Colin Ross, Christopher Hell, Stephen McNallan, Veronica Clark, Tom Rousel, and many more. For now, we say thank you for listening, guys and gals, but we'll be right back with the second hour. We'll talk to you on the other side of this break.